Welcome home, everyone. Thank you for joining in on this episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Welcome Home is a podcast where I, your host Josh, sit down for a conversation with different people who I admire and discuss whatever's on their mind, and especially focus on life at home in times like this. Wherever you are, and however you're listening, thank you for your support, and once again, welcome home. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining in on this week's episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Hope everyone is enjoying their week so far. This episode will come out, I think, second week of May. So hopefully the spring and warmer weather is reaching you wherever you're at. I want to thank those of you who support this show and Katina Ministries by listening, by watching on our YouTube channel. And I especially want to thank those of you who support our ministry financially, our monthly partners. You are the reason we're able to do things like this show and everything else we do with Katina Ministries. It wouldn't be possible without you. So thank you so much for your support. If you are listening or watching and you're curious to learn more about what Katina Ministries is, the best way to do that is to visit our website, thekatinas.com. You'll find all the information you need to know there. So thanks in advance for that. Today, I'm excited to have a first-time guest on the show, someone who has been a friend of the Katina family for decades now at this point. He is a good friend. I know my uncles consider him family, a world-class music producer, Mr. Robert Marvin. Robert, thank you for being here, bro.
Man, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, brother.
Means a lot.
Uncle Jesse, a couple weeks ago, texted me. He said, I was like, we need a guest for whatever today is. And he's like, I think Robert's going to come. And I was like, oh, I've heard that one before.
He made it.
But we locked up the appointment. So I appreciate you being here, man. And whenever we have first-time guests, I usually just give them a chance to introduce themselves. So I'd ask, could you tell our audience kind of who you are, where you're from, what you do? And then if you wouldn't mind sharing what your connection is with the Katina family as well.
Yeah, I'm a songwriter, producer, and so fortunate to have met Jesse as a baby almost. I think I was probably 23 years old, and I had just moved to town, and I think literally you were probably the first person I met out of, like, we all know Sam Chappell, and he had brought me over, met Jesse, and we clicked right away, and I think we probably went to the mall for our first hang.
Several places.
That sounds right to me.
And then we started making music, and I mean, that's how fast and quick, I mean, instantly music, instant friends, and since we've worked on many records together, and here we are decades later.
Robert is one of my best friends, and we did a lot of things for the first time together. Shortly after Robert moved here, we just, like he said, we clicked, we hung out even way before talking about music or working together. We hung out. Matter of fact, I spent two Christmases away from my family.
Oh, I forgot about that.
With this dude.
Yeah. Wow.
One Christmas, we went to Ohio. We had some mutual friends. And I remember driving there thinking, what am I doing? I know these people, but I don't think I know them that well. How is this going to go down? And then I think the following year, I went with Robert to his family in Oregon. It's the first time I ever snowboard. I still have nightmares to this day, thinking, man, I could have killed myself. Man, that was so dangerous.
My memory is you were so good.
Man, I don't know about that. But anyways.
Generally, Samoans and ice do not mix well.
No, we don't do well. It's like Cool Runnings.
Yeah. I think you looked cool, though.
I'm sure. On the snow. I'm sure I did. Yeah, but
dialed.
Anyway, so Robert and I go way, way back. Wow. We were in each other's weddings. And and so there's a lot of things about music. I mean, I had been doing it way before I met Robert, but when I met Robert, I got to explore music for the first time like I never did. Mm-hmm. You know, the ins and outs of producing. And so, man, I owe a lot to this dude.
Robert, so you're originally from Oregon.
Yes.
How old were you when you moved to Nashville?
23.
Okay, and you moved here for music?
Yeah, so, I mean, I would, like, right out of college, and Sam Chapel, Steve Brewster, I mean, this whole connection with Goatee, 40 Records. Yeah, I moved out for music, and I remember Sam being like, I'll introduce you to some people, and first introduction was the Katinas. You guys were working on Music Row at Tom Collins.
I think. I gotta say something about that day. So Sam Chapel, Robert was working with him, and Sam Chapel was our manager at the time. And I remember one day of the week, I was at church, Bethel, and somebody was preaching about, hey, you got to go beyond the norm to meet somebody and to share your life with them. And I thought, man, what does that mean, man? I mean, I feel like we're cool with people that we meet. Well, we were in a writing session at Tom Collins Studios, and here this kid walks in. Sam Chapel said, hey, guys, this is Robert Marvin. Could he just sit here? We're like, yeah, that's cool. So Rob just sat there, and we did our thing, and I was just going to leave right after the session, and I just so I just leaned over and said, what was your name? He said, oh, my name is Robert. Where are you from? Oregon. What are you doing tonight? I don't have any plans. All right, man, let's go watch a movie. Thinking this sermon, do something out of the ordinary just to share the love of, you know. So Robert and his friend, Matt Carney. They meet me at the theater. I don't know what we're watching. Buy the tickets, walk in the theater. It's so packed that we couldn't even sit together. So we're watching the movie, and I thought, man, that's awesome. I really took
check that box
to the word, man. That's awesome, man. So we walk out of the movie and say, hey, man, nice to meet you. And that was pretty much it.
Wow.
And so do you remember that?
I remember going to the movies, it's just funny how it feels like a lifetime ago. But yes.
So did you go to school for music?
No.
No?
I was an architecture major at University of Oregon.
Okay.
And yeah, did that. I had always done music, played piano, made tracks, but I didn't have like a, didn't go to school for it. I didn't really, wasn't pursuing that as a career. It was more of a hobby. So when I had produced a demo that ultimately how I even met Sam Chapel and all that, a demo had made it to, I think, the demo box at Goatee 40 Records, and Steve Brewster had listened to this CD, called the number. Long story, they flew out to Eugene, Portland. And yeah, I ended up being, hey, you should move to Nashville. You could have a career in producing music. And I was thinking, whoa. And I think at that time I was like, wow, I could do music for a living. That'd be awesome. And it's one of those things where, you know, I prayed about it. I met with, you know, my pastor and my parents. Everyone was always supportive of music. And actually, if anything, almost pushing me to do music for a career. But I didn't want to because I was like, I don't sing. I'm like, what would I do? But everyone believed in me since I was little. So I think when Sam ultimately flew out and met with my parents and was like, hey, I'll look after him. And I think it'd be awesome for him. I think that kind of gave not only me a piece, but my parents. So when I moved, Sam has always just followed through with everything he said. It just kind of, you know, he would open a door, you know, and I still had to walk through it and whatever happened. But like, obviously this, how long we've known each other happened because of Sam. And I think Toby's belief in Matt and I, since we were moved to town, Jesse, it's just been like God's opened so many doors. And here I am, I guess I'm still doing music.
Wow. That's amazing.
24 years later.
Off of one demo tape.
Oh, I know. And I think about it now, I'm like, man, that is, you know, when it's the only story that you know because it's your life, you think, yeah, I guess this is normal.
Yeah.
But now, after being in the industry for this long, I realize, God, that is just so crazy. And I'm very thankful. But it's like, yeah, it's really cool to see how, you know, just being faithful, showing up, and being open to trying new things. And I mean, moving somewhere across the country, not knowing anybody is always, you know, scary. But when you're young, it sounds fun. And so meeting Jesse was like the most perfect thing. And I think, you know, we're both single. We went to the same church. Living life and figuring it out together was cool. And so that energy, I think, goes into the studio when we started making music. And
Yeah,
that was pretty cool, Rob. So our record was the first one that you worked on?
Yeah.
Wow. And so if I remember correctly, when we were, it was such a refreshing friendship and relationship to have, especially the music part.
Yeah.
Because I got to explore things that I had never imagined. You know, I would show up to sessions and just kind of, you know, take notes from Uncle Yeti, Sam, and whatever my part was, and go in the booth and do it. But being around Robert, because we were close friends, we were single, we didn't have a lot going on, and so we spent hours. Yeah. And Robert is amazing at sounds and beats, and so we literally got to figure out some things together, man. And so I'll never forget that, man.
For the audience, because I know I'll listen to some of your guys' stuff, and I'll ask, who made this record? And a lot of times, oh, that was Robert.
Oh,
and,
wow.
But for the audience, what are some of the projects that you worked on?
Yeah, the first song that we worked on was If You Really, on that, your second album.
Yeah, there's a funny story about, is it If You Really? No, it's not If You Really. One of the songs that we worked on together is a song called Someday, and it's about my mom, Grandma C.I. But the original version was not about Grandma. I don't even think I ever really talked about it. It was about a relationship that I was in. That,
oh, wow.
It was a breakup. And I remember Robert came up with a cool beat. You probably don't even remember.
I don't.
This. It's probably the only song that I didn't write with a pen and a paper.
Oh, wow.
I just said, "Hey Rob, is the mic on?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "Dude, man, I'm so frustrated, man. I can't believe this is happening, man. Turn it on, man. I'm gonna sing about this girl, man." So I recorded, I don't know what I said, but it was a song of frustration and anger. And so, but thank God that he turned it around to be Someday.
Wow. So the Destiny record.
That's what it's called, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the first record that ever I worked on. And I think I was thankful, and I was so green, amateur. They let me produce it.
We both were, man.
Jesse was kind. And they all fought for me. It was good.
Yes.
Go ahead.
No, it was just a blast, and it was fun. It was just the amount of people I met through that experience was just awesome.
Yeah.
So were you pretty much self-taught producer, or did you have
teacher? I mean, I had like piano lessons, you know, okay. Like typical, like, you know, when you do music, all the way from like 6 years old, and I stayed in lessons through high school.
Okay.
And then I had like a cool experience where I was in band.
Okay.
And then my band teacher had a synthesizer in his office, and he saw that I was so intrigued by it, and I would come in after hours of school and just so I could play and mess with it. And I think and this is to say a lot for like teachers when they see something on someone to like go the extra and beyond. He did a lot to change my life because he saw my hunger towards that. And then he knew this teacher that lived in Portland. He taught MIDI synthesis studios, but he also had taught at Stanford, and he's from North Texas, a jazz musician, just prolific. And he's like, "You should go meet with him." And I did. And I was like, "Oh my gosh, you can make," I was like, kind of, my mind was blown. Like, you could track everything. And it was like really on, and, you know, like my understanding of how music was made. But he had a long wait of like waiting list to be a student of his. And for whatever reason, he allowed me to come in, and I became a student of his through high school. And so he taught me MIDI sequencing, and he had me remake like my favorite songs on the radio. Cool. And so I think learning that retroactively, like trying to recreate, you learn so much.
Sure.
And obviously now with YouTube, and you can do everything so easily, but like back then in the 90s, early 90s, I was like, whoa, this is so cool. And I, you know, how would have known that would have been giving me the groundwork to do what I was doing. And then I think I was making like recording on cassette tape and making these instrumentals, which then when I went to college, the head of the school of music at University of Oregon had heard my music, and he then got me into the studio. He's like, "Let me teach you how to record vocals."
Oh, wow.
And so he was just like
an architecture student.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And so I was always, it's funny, I was pursuing this one thing, but God was constantly opening doors in this avenue where I wasn't pursuing music, but it was just this constant, like, kind of open path that it's like, okay, wow, I'll keep this is awesome. And ultimately, because I was at the School of Music and learning how to do vocals, that was the demo CD that I had made that ultimately got to the demo box at Goatee. And so all that, you know, one step at a time, you know, because in my brain, I was like, I was going to do architecture, but ultimately I wanted to go to the Art Center in Pasadena because I wanted to be a car designer. Mm. So it was more of a path like that. So music, yeah, it just took me, and I've been doing it ever since. It's crazy.
It's so interesting to me hearing kind of the story of your education and music in music, because now you kind of touched on it. Now you can learn everything on YouTube for free. Like, you don't have to go meet some guy.
No, and
be on a waiting list. I'm curious to ask you as a producer today, like seeing how much just that process has changed. I feel like the barriers to entry are so much lower today for learning how to produce music, and even the cost of it has gone down. Do you ever feel like, I'm curious, do you ever feel like, man, if I was 23 today and had everything these kids have now, I'd be...
You know what's, I have thought a lot about this.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is, I think at one, you could look at it one way, like, wow, everyone can do this, it's so easy. But I feel like what I do appreciate about the old way was it had a natural weeding out process, because if you truly had to love something, because it would require you to pursue it, seek it out, stick it through. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, they like, because they can do lots of things, they try lots of things, but because it's so easy, the in and out is like, you can kind of lose. It's almost like, because I loved music so much, I was just, you kind of just stick in it, and you're able to learn a lot that way. And also, like, it makes me realize, back in those days too, sounds like maybe so old, but to be a teacher, you had to be really well versed on what you knew. Yeah. Therefore you could teach. Whereas today you don't need to know anything to teach. Sure. Anyone could teach you something.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is for me to be on YouTube, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And then I realize, oh, I'm able to weed out, this person knows what he's talking about, this person doesn't know what he's talking about for me. So I can learn very specifically. But if someone didn't know anything, you're getting the amount of information that you're getting that is just all over the place. You have no idea what's correct, and it's kind of just like a free for all.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's interesting, but I do find a lot of the younger guys that I've met and worked with, their interest, the passion could be strong, but I think because it was so easy, then if it doesn't work, it's almost like I don't see the grit to make it through some of the hard things at times, because it tests you along the way, because not everything's fun. It's like, ultimately it's fun. We get to make music, but there's a lot of work involved in terms of like developing your skill and craft and like things that people don't probably get to see.
But. Man, that's crazy, Robert. You know, music and producing has for sure evolved.
I mean,
in some ways I feel young, but then in some ways I'm like, oh my God, I think you came into the music game long after tape was gone. We were recording on tape. I mean, I remember those days, man. We were stressed out. Like, guys, we got one shot. We got to knock this out, man. If we make a mistake in the middle of the song, we got to go back and to do it. I mean, it was, but even in that, one of my favorite producers, his name is Tommy Sims. I remember we used to record, and in the process of a song, I would feel like I sang a wrong note. Mm. He was the one that taught me that, hey, Jesse, the vibe is still cool.
Yeah.
I'm like, are we going to fix it? He goes, no, we're not going to fix it. Yeah. The emotion is there.
Yep.
And that's good enough. And nowadays, man, I mean, we could fix everything, man. I mean, so music has come a long ways. And so I guess one of my questions to you is, as a producer, what has changed in the last 20 years for you?
Yeah, to speak on that though, like the vibe is everything. And I think when I was young, when you don't know anything, all you're going off is gut and heart. Mm-hmm. And you can learn all of these skills. And I notice like at times when I'll go back and I've listened to stuff I did when I didn't know anything, and I'm like, wow, how did I do that? Wow, that's pretty good. Or to hear that, it makes me go, wow, music is the great equalizer. Mm. Because a lot of things in life, the the more you do it, the better you get. With music, it's what's interesting is it's like it comes from a different place. So you can get better at your skill, but you can also lose, you can get away from where that
true
thing comes from.
Yeah.
And you get so proficient, but you've lost maybe the heart. And I feel like that's why, yeah, when you do vocals or everything, if it has a vibe, just being able to be like, you know what, that's great. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, we can edit, we can tune, but it doesn't always necessarily mean it should be.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you can just make it too perfect and then it just becomes like everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
So the tools, I would say how it's changed, yeah, everything becomes easier to do. You can, there's nothing's, I mean, so precious you couldn't fix it. Whereas back in the day, it was like, this is it.
Yeah.
But that restriction, weirdly, I think is good for music at times because having too many options, it just is, it doesn't necessarily make it better.
Yeah.
And I like the simplicity of, like, I miss some of that because I'm like, oh, I didn't have a lot, yet I still make good music.
Yeah.
But we want to consume so much and get new things, which it can be helpful. But, like, at times I'm like, why do I feel so inspired, at least for me, when I go out just on my laptop? And I'm not in my studio, I'm on my headphones. And because of that restriction, it allows me to get to that original place of like what I'm feeling. And sometimes when I'm in my studio and I have every option, it can feel like, I don't know. I don't want to say seem like I'm complaining about it. It's just like there's something beautiful in the simplicity of keeping it at raw.
There's this artist who I really enjoy. His name's J. Cole. And he has this famous thing called the 7-minute drill where he'll be working with a producer and he said, all right, you have 7 minutes to make a beat. So the producer, there's the restriction on that. It's a self-imposed restriction, 7 minutes. And then Cole has 7 minutes to write his verse.
Wow. Yeah.
And some of those songs have ended up on his records that he made in. It was produced in 7 minutes, written in 7 minutes. And I think there is still something to... creativity can come from restriction.
Yes.
And when you put... even if it's self-imposed, I think there can be value in that. It's interesting to hear
your perspective. When there's a time limit on it, that's being forced to be so guttural.
Yeah.
You can't be an editor. You can't be like, oh, is that the best sound? It doesn't matter. So it's just keeping in that flow state.
Yep.
And you can always go back and if there's something there. But I think there's something really powerful about that kind of exercise because you might create a lot of junk, but there will be these nuggets that I bet you will be, wow, I would have never done that had I not put those restrictions on. And I think even for me now, just to even keep in that exercise, like get up early, like a lot of times I'll just like try to create something before I work. Mm. It's like, even if it's a loop, just to get that flowing. And I do notice, like, when I do that, a lot of times I like what I make so much more in those moments where I have a time limit than when I have as much time as whatever. And I think what's interesting about music, too, is, like, we tend to put value on things based on time. If something took a long time, it cost me a lot because I spent a lot of time on it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's good.
Sure.
And what's interesting about music sometimes when it's like so fast, I'm able to actually hear it as normal people would hear it. Mm-hmm. And when you live with it and work on it for so long, you've now kind of like, you have like a bias towards certain things and cannot hear it for the first time. Like, and so there is something very powerful about working fast. So,
yeah, I got a question for you, Rob. It's been a while since we've worked on music together, but I remember back in the day, man, you and I were always, inspiration came easily through beats. Are you still writing that way? Because I know you're a great piano player as well. Or is it a variety of ways?
No, I've been weirdly, I'm like, oh, I miss that. I feel like creating music, there's so many different ways what could come first. I haven't made tracks as much as I mean, I do, but like not through the lens of like for cuts. It's more of an exercise for me to just get my creative thing out. But I do miss when I was younger, I used to do the drums first. It was easier for me to create music to a beat literally there than if I create music and then have to do drums. Yeah. I think because I am a keyboard player, not a drummer, it allowed me to play more to the beat when it was there. And if the beat's awesome, you don't have to do a lot of music. So
the reason why I brought that up, one of the songs that we recorded together was a song by Hillsong. darling shit called Eagle's Wings. And I remember one time the inspiration for the version that we did, Robert and I were driving somewhere, and this song by the band Savage Garden came on.
And
they had this cool beat. I don't know if it was an 808, but I just remember thinking, Rob, man, I think we can do Eagle's Wings with this beat in
That's
my
cool.
head. Robert laid it down, and instantly, man,
wow,
we came up with an arrangement for Eagle's Wings.
That's a cool story.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a little different path I want to go down, and it's interesting because before we started recording, we talked about you guys both have kids same age, and I'll say this. So growing up myself with a dad who's in the music industry, I didn't realize until I was like maybe 6 or 7 that my dad was a little different than my friends' dads. Like, my dad was traveling every weekend, and he plays the drums and sings, and he works with his brothers. I met my classmates in school. Oh, yeah, my dad works at this company, this bank, this whatever. And I don't know. I had a moment of realization when I was a kid that, oh, yeah, my dad is kind of weird. Like, the way he makes money is, that's not a normal thing. And, but I think it really affected, like, just my outlook on life in a positive way that, I don't know, I feel like maybe I left some doors open in my life that if I hadn't seen that what my dad did, I would have closed those doors. But I'm curious to ask you guys as fathers, providers, you guys provide for your family through music, and now you have kids around the same age. Are there any lessons, I guess, that you feel like you hope you pass down to your kids through your experience in the music industry when it comes to maybe following your dreams or allowing yourself to be open to different opportunities?
That's a cool question. I have 3 daughters, so I will say, you know, I think when they're young, they don't know any different. And now that they're in high school and they've come to me later and they're like, oh, yeah, my dad doesn't look like or dress or have a normal job like my friends. But I think what was kind of cool is sometimes they would be watching a show they like, and they'd be like, Dad, oh, you did that song that's on that show. Or these kind of like, whoa, what my dad does is cool. Mm-hmm. That happened pretty a lot later.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I'm thinking it's cool the whole time. But it took a while, you know, as a kid. But I will say, this has been kind of funny, but my girls have said this. They don't feel like I work. So they would say, Dad just hangs out with his friends and makes music. So to them, that just looks like I just have fun.
Mm-hmm.
Which on one hand, I'm thinking, oh, that's amazing. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
At first I want to like defend, like, no, I'm working. But then I was like, oh, but that's something true about that. I am working with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause if we're making music together, it's usually they're my friends. So that's true. And we are making music. And at times I think when you get into music, we forget that, like, wow, we're making music for a job.
Yeah.
It's pretty unique. And I think probably all of us have worked normal jobs at some time in our life. So we know, like, wow, this is a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. I mean, you don't always know where it's going to come from, and you are creating something that might bring something in or not. And that's not usually why we're doing it. And also music's a lot like farming. You're planting seeds that might not see something for a long time. So there's probably an entrepreneurial, not having a boss, but setting your own schedule that probably your kids, I would assume, over time notice, you know? And I have yet to probably have some of these conversations with them to see how that's like positively or negatively made them see things. But yeah, I think about that a lot, actually.
Robin and I, we're close in age, and our kids are right around the same age as well. He's got 3 girls. I got 2 girls and a boy. I'm grateful that my son Boston, who's 19, he works alongside of us. But a couple years ago, my youngest, Sammy, she had some class, and you had to give a description of what your parents did. So they asked Sammy, said, what do your parents do? Sammy goes, well, my mom works out a lot. And my dad, he doesn't do anything.
Wow.
And so when I found this out, I said, Sam, that's not true. Mommy works out a lot. Goes, yeah. How do you know? Well, she's always in workout clothes around the house. And I was like, oh, well, I guess that makes sense. But how come you said I don't do anything? She goes, Dad, when I wake up, you're here. When I go to school and I come back, you're still here. Yeah. You don't do anything. Yeah. And I thought, oh, my God, that's hilarious, man. But for me, as a dad, to try to instill in them whatever you want to do in life, whatever you want to pursue, you got to work hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Work hard. You know, this whole thing, work smarter and not harder. I think there's some truth to it. But I think in the same way, nothing comes easy. Mm-hmm. You know, real gold is defined through fire.
Yeah.
And there's some sacrifice, and there's some failure involved, mm-hmm. you know, in succeeding in anything that you want to do. So
yeah.
We're still in the process. My kids are growing. And I thank God for them every day, man. Yeah. And so we'll see.
It's funny. I have memories, Robert, of being in your studio when I was young. And my dad was there working.
Yeah.
And I can see how, to an outsider, like a studio session I can totally see how it looks like, oh, they're just hanging out.
Yeah.
They're not really working. Like, and I obviously know now that's not true, but I do think there's something about a studio session where it's almost like the hang and the vibe is a part of the work.
Yeah,
like there is I don't know if you can, maybe you can say, oh, Josh, you're wrong. But I don't see like a lot of great music being made in like a super corporate professional atmosphere. Yeah. I don't know. What would you
say? Yeah, I would say music making is kind of weirdly intimate in the sense that, you know, when you're writing songs, you're, depending on what you're writing about, it's personal. It's vulnerable. You're putting out ideas that could be turned down. It could be, we're all fighting for the same thing, to create something that's great. And I think just in that process, a lot of times I feel like that comes out of relationship. The more I know someone and the closer I am, I feel like the work doesn't mean that I couldn't meet someone and write a song. It just, there's a sense of like, you can get to that vulnerable place faster or where it needs to happen when you have a relationship with them. So that part I feel like is so important in music. Yeah. And if it's corporate, it's going to create a different output. And yeah. So I think the music, it just comes more natural when it's, you know, like a family environment where you're just hanging out. I totally agree, where you're socializing. A lot of times, maybe the conversation you're having over lunch is the thing that you end up, oh, that's a good song idea. Let's work on that. Like, to separate it and be like, that's eating lunch and now we're working. I feel like it's an extension of life. So,
yeah, Robert does an amazing job at really creating a space where it's just relaxed, it's easy going, it's fun. Obviously, he being one of my best friends, every time I was at his studio, I just felt like, man, we say whatever, hang whatever, wear whatever. You know, I've been to studios where I'm like, oh my God, is it okay that I'm sitting like this?
Yeah.
And it's just really hard to capture the right emotion. Like, for instance, Robert doesn't even know this. We were recording a song called Praying For You. James was on the bass, Joe was on the drums, and Sam was on the keys. And I was in another room just laying down a scratch vocal for the song just so they can play to it. And it was just a stool. And I think I was literally laying down just holding a mic like this, just trying to sing. Well, on the bridge of that song, we kept my scratch vocal. And it just, when we went to listen back, we were like, wow, that, I didn't intend to do that, but I was just in a really relaxed mood, I guess. Yeah. And we were able to capture a good take, I guess. And so that's what's on the record, Praying For You.
Do the girls like music?
My girls?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I mean, yeah, they love music. And I think it's cool to be at this stage of life because now I realize at their age, I'm like, oh, this is, you know, the pulse of what's new in their ears. And so it's like, I'd heard about that when I was young because, you know, we were all at that age at one point and everything that's new and relevant felt correct and like awesome.
Yeah. What are they listening to?
Well, living in Nashville, there's a lot of country in there.
Uh-huh.
But I would say, you know, obviously it's dictated by their friends. And sure. I try to like, is there anything that they like that's maybe outside of like what all the norm is? I don't know about you, but like when I was young, I didn't listen to like a lot of the same things my friends were listening to. And I don't know if that's like, it's a certain age. You know what I mean? Because I feel like there's a certain age where you want to fit in, you like everything, and then there's a point where you kind of develop your own thing. Because I was kind of always like stuff that was different, not because it was different, it just ended up being that way. I haven't seen that per se with my girls.
Yeah.
It's kind of like whatever is popular. But what are they listening to? I mean, it's kind of what's all popular at the moment. But they do show me a lot of things that I'm like, haven't heard of before. The biggest difference is, this one is the one that blows my mind. They'll be playing a song, or I'll be playing a song that I like from my era.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, whoa, Dad, I know this. I'm like, what? They're like, this is a TikTok song. And I'm like, what? But they don't know the song.
Yeah,
they're like, it sounds familiar, but then they'll get to a certain part of it. And they're like, this is the song. And I'm like, wait, what? No, this is the whole song. They've never even heard the whole song. It's just this one part. And I'm always like, what a weird world we live in where, you know, it's like,
yeah, man, I was singing this song, can we talk for a minute? Yeah,
yep.
Tevin Campbell, man, yep. Boston and Mira, like, yeah, that's a TikTok song. I'm like, ugh, you say that to me one more time.
Did you ever, was there ever a time where you tried to like kind of curate your girl's taste in music?
No, well, not on purpose. I think my oldest, there was some crossover. She liked a lot of music that I had curated together. I had done, not on purpose, but like I was running sound at church, and a lot of times I would curate the music for pre-service, you know, people walking in and after service. And so I was curating music that I really liked, but also I had to think about it from the lens of like, I didn't really want a lot of lyric and it's more music and it's a certain vibe. And then she would hear that and like it. And then that would, you know, go off into like, oh, Dad, I love these certain kinds of songs. And so, yeah, I guess in a way, but not on purpose per se. Yeah.
I have a funny story. So I've always loved music. And I remember I was maybe 10 or 11. My Uncle Dave gave me, for my birthday, my first iPod. And so Finally, I was listening to all the music I wanted to listen to, and somehow my dad got a hold of my iPod. Okay. He was listening to what I was listening to, and he was like, "Oh, this is not gonna work." So I remember my dad drove to. I think I've told this story before, but he drove to the Target down the street when Target used to sell CDs with like. They were basically just like mixtapes of like different songs or whatever. And he bought like the classic R&B mix CD. And it was Earth, Wind & Fire, Luther Vandross, Heat Wave. And he was like, this is what you're listening to now.
This is what you're gonna listen to.
And so, but that, I was probably 10, 11, 12. That CD really, I think, shaped the way I listen to music today still.
Wow.
And so I'm thankful to my dad, but I was just curious, like, from you, have you ever heard anything that your daughters are listening to? Say, oh, this is garbage.
yeah. It's weird because, like, as a parent, a lot of being a parent can feel so hypocritical, you know, because like when you're a first time parent, you're like, whoa, I did this. And yet here I am now the parent. But then I'm like, what's different? What's the same? A lot of times I listened to music when I was young. I was raised in a godly home and protective over what I could listen to. And I got in trouble, like a lot of people my age, of like listening to stuff I shouldn't have. But it wasn't, I was more drawn into the music. I loved the way the melody or the sounds that were going on. I didn't listen to the lyrics per se. And a lot of times I didn't even know what was being said. Now I'm like, wow. Doesn't mean that those lyrics aren't impacting you subconsciously, but I was just like, that's not what I was listening to it for. And I'm not making this about gender at all, but like for whatever reason, my experience is girls listen to lyrics a lot. And they, my girls are always, that's why they like music a lot of times is the lyrics. So I think the genres that they tend to listen to are more lyric driven genres. That part I don't relate to as much. Because I was so much into the music. I listened to instrumental music and just, that would be maybe some of the differences. But like, yeah, I've heard things at times where I'm like, I don't love that. Especially as a dad of daughters. But I can, it's hard to, it's almost like having conversations about the general things because I can't micromanage a lot of it. But I will, they know my opinion. But I do love that they want to show me stuff. Dad, listen to this song, listen to this song. But the other bummer is I feel like they don't listen to whole songs. They listen to 30 seconds and they turn it. That part bums me.
Well, man, the same, Rob. I mean, I think the way I listened to music was the same. I wasn't really paying attention lyrically more than the sounds and the beat and all of that. But I mean, every day is a, it's a struggle when it comes to trying to be open. I know it in my in my head that you want to be open. And sometimes when we listen to songs and I might be critical of what they're singing about, I try. Sometimes I execute it. Most of the time I don't, of trying to have conversation. Man, Boston Mural, why do you listen to this song? Instead of just, you should be listening to this. That is, you know. So we're all on our journey when it comes to that. And, you know,
I'll ask you this, Robert, and we can finish with this question. It's a question that I like to ask our guests. And it's probably a selfish question for me because it's something I'm really interested in with my own life. But I'm curious, what is it that you're dreaming about today and for your life right now? What's the dream for Robert Marvin?
Wow. That's a heavy question. I would say that I am weirdly on that path more now than probably I was even when I was younger. I think life probably has like these key moments that happen to you, cycles. That's a super deep question. I could go a long time on this. But like just trying to find your purpose, God's calling on your life. I would relate that to dreams because I wouldn't say I per se had dreams in terms of like a literally dreaming, but I've always had ideas of things that I really, really enjoy or wanted to do. And music being one. But it would have been a dream because it wasn't a practical reality for me. But I didn't know what that meant. And it was almost like that felt like outside of my, like I loved music. There was some innate natural ability or talent that God had given me that I needed to develop, constantly still need to develop. But it's like that path of like God's calling versus like, what do I do with my life, career, how I make money. I'm always been on this interesting journey and in how those can be intertwined. Because sometimes your calling might not have anything to do with how you make money. So I'm going somewhere with this because I, you know, I get into music and I've been doing it for a long time. And I think there's moments where I'm like, oh my gosh, this is, I know without a shadow of a doubt, I'm supposed to do this. Not because I'm special, not because I think I'm awesome. None of those things actually, just like one of those moments where you realize you have peace, you've, you're impacting people, people are impacting you. Like there's fruit that is like evident and you are working, but that work feels effortless in the sense that the strength is coming from somewhere else. It's not like you're striving. I don't know how to describe it. There's like this beautiful thing. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm supposed to do this.
Yeah.
I've been doing it now 20 plus years, where there's a lot of it that is striving and it's not fun and I feel lost. And so I just on my own personal journey, about 2013, 2014, I stepped away from music because I felt lost and I was like, I felt like I had gotten away from my heart and why I did what I did. Mm-hmm. It became a lot more about money and other things. Mm. So I felt like in my relationship with God, I was really seeking him like I never had before, to put it away or down or just, and I went and did something else for money. And in that season, it like directed me towards, you know, ministry and church. And I love that. But I ultimately was asking myself this question, like, God, what is the calling on my life? What am I want? I feel lost. I'm doing music, but I need more direction and it feels vague. Like I just was like lost in a way. And so in that journey, ultimately I felt like God was saying I would still do music, but it would look different. And I didn't know what that meant at that time. And I eventually got back into music. And what's interesting is life takes a lot of turns. Life is so full of things you would never guess, or, you know, tragedy or heartbreak or just things that are like hard. And they will really test you in every aspect. And I'm so thankful for, you know, my relationship with God. And, you know, that's never been on question. And if anything, as hard as life gets, it drives me closer to God. And I'm still weirdly on that journey because I think I've walked through some of the hardest things ever in my life in the past few years. And I think walking through that really makes me question, what am I supposed to do with my life? Because as you get older, that becomes even more relevant. As you get to, you know, you see your parents getting older, potentially passing, you realize, wow, life is really short. And I want to finish strong. I want to be, at the end of the day, know I did what I was supposed to do. And I think it's so easy in the day-to-day to get lost sometimes from, we get to do this, but there's a bigger purpose. And at times, my specific job, because I'm behind the scenes, I'm not in the public's eye on any level. It can get very like, one's talent or maybe ability is not flashy. It doesn't look where people can see what you're doing. It can feel very like, do I even have what, why am I doing what I do? I think a lot of times when I talk to artists that I've worked with, they have such a viable feedback mechanism where they're on stage or they get to hear people, hey, that song really impacted me. Or it can feel like, oh, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Yeah. What I do, I don't necessarily have that visceral feedback. Sure. So at times I'm like, why am I doing what I'm doing? Like, and I still struggle with that a lot. So as you ask that now and what I've walked through personally, it's just like, I'm literally like, I mean, on the way here, I was literally listening to something. Like I spent a lot of time in prayer, you know, walking like, okay, God, I'm at a crossroads in my life right now. I really need to be on my purpose of what I'm supposed to do. I don't know the per se answer to that, but I do feel like I'm being potentially led into areas I've never done before and outside my comfort zone. So it's new. I don't know the answer to that. I know it's related to music, and I think we walk through things and we pick up wisdom and knowledge from all of that that potentially opens up doors for a new thing that's still related because we're going to be pulling upon all those experiences. Okay. But
I, a couple weeks ago, we had a guest on. His name's Brett Kern. He was a punter in the NFL for the Titans for like 15 years. He recently retired.
Yeah.
And I asked him a similar question. And his answer to me was, I don't know.
Yeah.
And that he was the first person to like just straight up say, I don't know. But it really, it honestly blessed me to hear that and to know that hopefully one day you do know, but it's okay to be in a season where absolutely there's questions that you have that are unanswered. Yep. And same feeling I had with Brett. I'm blessed by your answer too. That's encouragement to hear from you, and it's really been just an honor to have you here on the show, man.
It's been an honor for me.
I just want to say, it's such a cool thing to have you on the podcast, but man, you've been a great friend throughout the years, even though
likewise
we don't see each other. But man, I want to encourage you, man, that you've had tremendous impact. So many people, including me. I know your girls, sweet, sweet girls. Mm-hmm. God's got an amazing plan for them. You're a great father, great provider. But man, a lot of the songs that we've done years ago, we still hear stories of these songs today.
It's awesome.
And whatever the impact is for them, for me, I just go in directly to those moments of recording these songs. Mm. The song Someday is talked about often with people losing loved ones and people passing away, and how the song has brought so much peace and comfort that really one day we're going to be with our loved ones again.
Yes.
And so thank you, man, for producing some great music. And I'm believing that.
Man, thank you.
More hits and great songs that are in you, man, they're share with the world.
Thank you. Yeah, I just feel blessed to be. What a cool journey, honestly, to be start with the Katinas and be, you know, we've touched and go throughout the career and then be here today 20 some years later, which is crazy. But I feel so blessed too that, like, God, the artists that I've got to work with have been just genuine, real. I haven't had negative experiences. I've been very like, man, these people are real. And then obviously starting with you guys has just been like, set the bar really high.
I know a lot of the people who listen to this podcast, they may not have known your name before, but a lot of their favorite music is because of you. So
that's cool.
Again, man, thank you for being here. You're welcome back on the show anytime.
Awesome. Thank you.
And hopefully we'll do it again sometime.
Awesome.
To those of you listening, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with more episodes soon. Have a great day.